It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
It is now an act involving violence, force, or threat that results in bodily injury or places you in reasonable apprehension of death, sexual assault, or bodily injury. And this can include, but it is not limited to, any forceful detention, stalking, criminal sexual assault, or any other criminal offense that results in bodily injury or places you in reasonable apprehension of that bodily injury. Note that the word serious has been removed from the description of bodily injury, and it does not have to be a criminal charge attached to the violence or force or threat of that.
Palma Pastelnik, staff attorney at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society's Charlottesville office, explains the existing law about domestic violence protective orders and the improvements that take effect on the 1st of July. And during this week's question and answer session, we talk about the difference between domestic violence cases handled in the criminal law and those handled in the civil or non-criminal law. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 130, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. The Supreme Court of Virginia found a yo-yo car dealer liable for violating the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC. A yo-yo car sale is when a consumer buys a car, with the dealership arranging financing, and drives the car off the lot, believing they have purchased it, only to have the dealer repossess the car, claiming the financing didn't go through. Brenda Britt obtained a new car from a car dealership after completing and signing, among other documents, a buyer's order and a retail installment sales contract. After failing to obtain financing for the sale of the car, the dealership repossessed and disposed of the vehicle without providing prior notice to Britt. She filed a warrant and debt against the dealership in general district court, alleging the dealership violated the UCC, which requires a secured party, after repossessing collateral, to provide the debtor with notice before disposing of the collateral. Two lower courts found in favor of Britt, and the Supreme Court of Virginia affirmed, holding that the dealership was a secured creditor and Britt was a debtor under the UCC, and the dealership failed to provide Britt the required notice of disposition. This entitled Britt to statutory damages equal to the amount financed plus 10% of the purchase price. In other news, a new Medicaid program called Plan First pays for family planning services for eligible men and women who have incomes less than or equal to 133% of the federal poverty level, which is much higher than the usual income level for Medicaid services for non-disabled adults. Plan First services are limited to an annual pelvic exam and pap test for women, an annual family planning physical exam for men, sexually transmitted infection testing, family planning education and counseling, birth control methods, and sterilizations if that is your choice. Unlike other Medicaid programs, resources are not considered. Individuals who have had a sterilization procedure, have medical insurance coverage, or are eligible for full coverage Medicaid are not eligible to participate in Plan First. Although the program is limited to family planning services, it does provide a mechanism for adults who otherwise lack health insurance or Medicaid coverage to at least get in to see a doctor. And there is no age limit on the program. Applications are made at the local Department of Social Services, but you must specifically ask for the application for Plan First, Virginia's family planning program for men and women. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You are listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Judd v. Van Horn. During a 1950 divorce, the Henrico County Circuit Court granted custody of the infant son to the mother, who returned to the home of her parents and took the child with her. The father, Robert William Judd, consistently paid his $30 per month child support and regularly visited his child. After the sudden death of the mother 2 years later, the grandmother was awarded temporary custody of the child with no notice sent to the father. When he learned of this, Mr. Judd filed for custody. The grandparents introduced no evidence that Mr. Judd was an unsuitable person to have custody, but argued that their home had been the child's home since the divorce was filed. The circuit court gave custody to the grandmother, but the Supreme Court of Virginia reversed. The court noted that upon the death of the mother, the father's natural custody rights toward his child were revived because there had been no showing that he was an unsuitable parent. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Judd v. Van Horn is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
If you're just joining us, this is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright, and we're here in the studio with this week's question and answer session. We have our questioner here. Would you tell us your name and where you're from?
Christy from Richmond.
Welcome to the show, Christy. What's your question for us this week?
I had a question on domestic violence.
Okay, go ahead.
The question is, what if the other person that put a charge on you started the violence?
Now, is this a criminal charge the other person has put on you? Is it a civil, non-criminal case, or is it both? If you're not sure, that's fine.
Not sure.
Okay, that's fine. Well, I think that gives me enough information to answer, at least the civil, non-criminal side of it. In the criminal law, things are very much different. There, the state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the person who is charged with the crime, whether it's assault and battery or something of that nature, actually committed that crime. And I'm not going to deal with that because we don't deal with criminal law. We deal with civil law. And on the civil side, there's something called a protective order that anyone who feels that she or he is a victim or survivor of domestic violence can file a petition for a protective order. To get a protective order, there has to have been domestic violence, which is an injury or a reasonable threat of injury that would put you in reasonable fear of harm. Now, a judge who probably has not heard anything on the criminal side will hear the petition for a civil protective order. And here the standard is quite different. You simply have to prove, by the greater weight of the evidence, that there was some sort of injury or threat to injure that resulted in reasonable fear. So the mere fact that the other person has taken out a criminal warrant against you is pretty much meaningless. And the mere fact that the other person has also seeking a protective order against you is pretty much meaningless, because each case gets judged on its own facts. Now, I have to sort of add a disclaimer here that if, in fact, the criminal case has already gone to trial and you have been found to have committed the criminal act that arose out of this domestic violence, you may have a problem there, because that's pretty much going to show that you were the aggressor or you were at fault. But if it's simply pending charges, then the judge may take that into account. But really, the judge wants to hear what happened and how it all started and how it all escalated and who said what and who did what. And although words alone are usually not enough to get a protective order, words coupled with any type of a threat, and certainly any type of a harmful or offensive touching, even if it's just, you know, holding someone against their will or shoving them, is enough to get a protective order. It does not have to be bruises or cuts or broken bones or anything like that. Any type of offensive or harmful touching would be enough to get a protective order. We're here at the Charlottesville office of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we're talking with attorney Palma Postolnik about the changes in protective order statutes that are going to become effective a week from Friday on July the 1st. Welcome to the show, Palma.
Thank you so much, Marty. It's good to be here.
Thank you for being here, Palma. Now, I think the best way to describe the changes, and it really is a whole rewrite of the entire statutory scheme, is to describe the current system first, and really kind of the two-track system, one dealing with family abuse and the other dealing with stalking, sexual abuse, and other acts of violence, and then talk in the second half about how it's all been merged together into one more or less unified system. So will you start by explaining family abuse protective orders?
In family abuse protective order, currently, you're dealing with any act involving violence, force, or threat, including but not limited to forceful detention and any of those acts that result in bodily injury or they place the victim in reasonable apprehension of a bodily injury, which is committed by a person that's a member of their family or household.
Now, what do we mean by a member of their family or a household member? Because that's an important distinction.
It's a very important distinction, and it's very, very specific. Generally speaking, we're talking about mother, father, sister, brother, son, daughter, any step-parent or step-child or step-sibling. We're talking about someone with whom you have a child in common, someone with whom you have cohabited in an intimate partner relationship over sometime in the last 12 months, or an in-law with whom you reside. So do not live next door to your in-laws. You can't do anything about it. But if you live with your in-laws, they are considered a family member.
So if the abuser fits into that definition of a household or family member, and you are threatened with family abuse or actually family abused, what do you do under the current system?
Under the current system, you are dealing with the Juvenile and Domestic Relations District Court system. And if you are in immediate danger or immediately injured, you can dial 911 and call the police, or you can go to your magistrate's office day or night and swear out an emergency protective order petition. And the magistrate's office, if they are persuaded by what has happened, they will grant you your emergency protective order right then and there, and then give you instructions for accessing the courts for a preliminary protective order. If law enforcement is called to assist you because of the nature of the altercation, they can also assist you with obtaining the emergency protective order from the magistrate's office.
Now, in addition to that system currently for family abuse, there's also sort of a parallel system for stalking, sexual assault, and other acts of violence. Could you describe that current system that's going to be going away in 9 days?
And that system is, as it stands now, that's a companion only to criminal situations where you are a victim of a criminal level of stalking, you're the victim of a criminal level of sexual battery as defined in the Virginia Code, or an aggravated sexual battery, or a criminal act that it results in a serious bodily injury. And you can only access that sort of protective order through the general district court if it accompanies a criminal warrant for arrest for the crime described.
So, in other words, under the current system, if it's not family abuse, as we just talked about, you can't get a protective order unless you also take out a criminal warrant.
Exactly.
Now, I gather that as of July 1, this all changes and it becomes a more unified system. Could you describe to our listeners how this is going to change on July the 1st?
Well, I think the easier way to do it is to start with the very few differences, because we are still going to be dealing with the two different courts. We're going to still be dealing with Juvenile and Domestic Relations District Court for the people that I've already described as your family or household members. And that definition of family or household member remains the same. If your person who is abusing you is not in that definition, you are now still in general district court. However, the behavior definition is now unified.
And what is that unified definition?
It is now an act involving violence, force, or threat that results in bodily injury or places you in reasonable apprehension of death, sexual assault, or bodily injury. And this can include, but it is not limited to, any forceful detention, stalking, criminal sexual assault, or any other criminal offense that results in bodily injury or places you in reasonable apprehension of that bodily injury. Note that the word serious has been removed from the description of bodily injury, and it does not have to be a criminal charge attached to the violence or force or threat of that.
So basically, if it's violence, force, or simply a threat that would put you in reasonable fear of injury, you're covered by this new definition, and what are your remedies if you are covered?
If you are covered by this definition, if the person who's presenting that threat of violence or that act of violence to you is the family member, you will either access the emergency protective procedure that I described earlier, or if it's not at that emerging danger where if your abuser has left and you've got a moment to recover yourself and you can deal with normal business hours, you can access the court services intake unit for your juvenile and domestic relations district court in your locality, and you can get a preliminary protective order petition filed there, and they will see to it that you get in front of a judge as quickly as possible to get a preliminary protective order, which is good for up to 2 weeks. And at that hearing, they will set the date for what's called the full protective order hearing, which is when both you and your accused abuser have the opportunity to be heard. And that is when a judge will determine, upon full presentation of evidence of both sides, whether or not to award the full up to 2 year protective order.
And if the full up to 2 year protective order is granted in this situation of family abuse, what type of relief can the judge order?
Well, at the most minimal level, the judge can order no further acts of family abuse or violence. Beyond that, they can order no contact, no exceptions, or no contact limited exceptions. If, for example, the petitioner feels that they need to have some sort of limited contact for either dealing with child issues or some other thing, they can say, well, Your Honor, except for perhaps email contact. And that way, at least there'd be a record of the contact. So if it becomes abusive, there's evidence of that. The petitioner can also ask for exclusive use and possession of the home where the couple has lived. The petitioner can ask for exclusive use and possession of a jointly titled or in the victim's only name titled vehicle. If it's a married couple and the car was bought with family assets, even if the car is only titled in the abuser's name, some judges will consider that marital property and will grant exclusive use and possession to the petitioner. In that case, it's on a local basis. Temporary child or spousal support can be awarded. The respondent or abuser can be barred from discontinuing any utilities that are in the abuser's name instead of in the petitioner's name. There's an awful lot of relief available. A protective order is an order controlling the actions of the respondent or the abuser. It is not an order controlling the actions of the petitioner or the victim. There was some confusion based on the earlier reading of the law because of the word between. And the General Assembly this year has clarified that so that it is in concert now with constitutional requirements for due process and an opportunity to be heard. So hopefully there will be no more confusion on the bench about whose actions are controlled by a protective order.
So contact by the abuser is prohibited, but not necessarily between the parties if the petitioner feels that it's appropriate to do that.
However, a caution is in order because any petitioner who contacts the respondent when there's a protective order in effect could be at risk of signaling to the court that either they are no longer afraid of their abuser or that they are trying to entice their abuser into violating the protective order. And so if the respondent abuser wants to petition the court to amend or drop the protective order, the victim petitioner could be giving evidence to that person to bolster their claim for vacating the protective order.
So how is the new system going to work on July 1 for the non-family abuse orders? That is the situation where you're not being abused or threatened by a family or household member. How is that going to work?
That's a good question. That's a question that a lot of the general district courts are trying to set up their own procedures for now. Obviously, in an emergency situation, the emergency process through the magistrate will still continue to work. The only difference from then to now is what the prohibited behaviors are and the fact that you no longer need to file a criminal warrant. So there will still be access to the emergency protective order through the magistrate's office. When you're attempting to access a preliminary protective order, the General District Court does not have a twin agency to the court services intake unit that the Juvenile Domestic Relations Court has. So how that piece will be handled is going to be dealt with on a court-by-court basis, at least until further guidance or training is received. So you would need to check with your court clerk for how that particular court is dealing with the petitions.
We have been speaking with Palma Pistolnik, and she is a staff attorney at the Charlottesville Office of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We have been talking about the changes that are going to take place in protective orders as of a week from Friday, July the 1st. Thank you so much for being here, Palma.
Thank you so much, Marty.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 17.1, which deals with courts of record. Under Code of Virginia 17.1-514, in any personal action in a circuit court, if it is determined that less than $100 exclusive of interest is due to the plaintiff, the court shall enter a judgment for the defendant. So, even if the plaintiff wins, the plaintiff loses. However, the law goes on to state that if the controversy was of greater value than $100, exclusive of interest, and it is determined that less than $100 is due the plaintiff, the court may enter a judgment for the plaintiff for what determined to be due in the court's discretion. So, if the plaintiff sued for more than $100 but won less than $100, the plaintiff might win or the plaintiff might lose. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Everyone is protected against discrimination in housing, and that includes people with disabilities. Join us next week when Dana Tranum, staff attorney at the Virginia Office for Protection and Advocacy, describes the laws that protect people with disabilities against discrimination in housing in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on February 3rd, 2010. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.